Welcome to the Full of Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 2:48 p.m. That is Pacific. No, it isn't. It is Central Time. I apologize. And today is February 25th. Well, yesterday it was looking like we were getting a buy the dip opportunity, and there was a lot of evidence that some companies were just jumping back into Bitcoin, and Bitcoin was up today. But then we had this massive surge in the Treasury yield. And the point that I've been making for most of this year has been that the Federal Reserve has pretty much given up on making predictions. So they're waiting for the market to tell them at what point the rising yield would then have an effect on the psychology of investors, and we have potentially reached that point in here today. So when we look at, for example, something that would be really quite interest rate sensitive, which is the ARK Innovation ETF, well, it pulled back rather violently, but it is still holding the low from Tuesday. And if it takes that out, well, then we are definitely in more of a mean reversion environment. Excuse me, I just had to sneeze. I'm definitely not coming down with COVID, but certainly there's been a lot of cold weather here. When we then think about the consistency of this trend, well, we can see, for example, that we had this really quite impressive advance up from the lows in March. Then we've had a couple of consolidations, and most of them have been one above the next, although we definitely dipped down into the last in October. But the sequence of higher reaction lows had been held the entire way through, and that ended this week. So, in order for this trend to remain intact, well, we are going to have to see a pretty impressive rebound tomorrow, and for the lows to at least hold. If we just simply then look at it on a weekly chart, well, then we can see that this is by far the largest downward dynamic that we've seen in really quite a long time. And even on a log scale chart, and then on a weekly basis, well, then we can see that there has been a clear loss of momentum at the minimum, but then also the potential that we're moving back into more of a reversionary type environment. And if yields were to continue to advance from here, well, we might even make the argument that this epic surge in the promising companies, well, then it could be over. So what happens in terms of yields is going to have a significant knock-on effect for these types of companies. Then when we think about the bond market, well, the 5-year treasury yield is the approximation of the duration of treasury issuance. And it rallied really rather spectacularly in here today. So there was a failed auction. We've had failed auctions in the past, but the failed auction of the 7-year when yields are already rising, well, that does suggest that bond investors are just not willing to take as read that the Federal Reserve is not going to raise interest rates, or that there won't be a need for the Fed to raise interest rates, because the commodity is telling us that global reflation is probably going to take place in a much faster manner than most people are willing to give credence to. We've had a very profound rebound in the industrial metals, and it's completed a 6-year base formation, and it continues to push on to new high ground. Copper prices are certainly overbought in the short term, and we did see at least some evidence of some profit taking in here today, but not nearly in as dynamic a manner as it might have been. This still remains a secular bull market candidate, so the surprises are likely to be on the upside. But just like any other commodity, then buying the dips is by far the best way to interact with the price, because failed upside breaks are generally to be expected within the commodity complex. And we have had a rather spectacular advance. So some consolidation in the copper price wouldn't be at all surprising. And it really does come down to the expansion of the yield curve. Now, there is absolutely nothing that is normal about the current situation. And I need to press the right button. So when we look at the yield curve spread, It's right up now to about 135 basis points. So it's reversed about 135 basis point decline since that peak in early 2017. And if we then just address the kind of conditions that we've seen in previous cycles, it is usually when the yield curve spread goes from inverted to positive and then surges higher. That's usually when the biggest problems arise. So normally, that the compression in the yield curve is viewed as something that is consistent with a very mature economic expansion. When it becomes inverted, it starts to choke off liquidity. Then you get a recession. Then you get the central banks belatedly intervening and cutting interest rates. That sharply widens the spread again. And usually, by the time the spread has got up towards the 250 basis point level, the recovery is well underway. And markets bottom around the time that the yield curve spread peaks. Well, markets bottomed in March, and we've had a really very profound move on the upside. The yield curve spread is now starting to move higher, and the quantity of debt outstanding is much larger than anything we've seen in the last couple of decades. So perhaps we need to go back and get more back history. And the only additional back history we have dates from the time of the savings and loan crisis at the end of the 1970s and early 1980s. Well, then that was a time when a lot of banks went bust, and we had this incredibly volatile environment in terms of yields. Whereas over the course of the last 30 years, we've had much more cyclicality in terms of the yield curve spread. But perhaps we are moving more into this kind of environment, because one thing that characterized the early 1980s was multilateral intervention, and in the currency markets. If we look at the dollar index over a very long time frame and try to get all the way back to the early 1980s, well, then we're going to get a really significant move. So you can see that the dollar had been strengthening for a prolonged period of time, and there was multilateral intervention to bring it back down again in the period from 1984 through to 1985, and it worked. Multilateral intervention always works. So we're nowhere near multilateral intervention today, and the dollar hasn't rallied by nearly the same extent. But it did rally rather well from 2011 through to about 2017, and it is now starting to come back down again. And we do have these long cycles of bull and bear markets that last about 7 years each for the dollar. Of course, when we then just start to think about the quantity of debt that's been taken out, it's incredibly large. And the size of the debt taken out relative to GDP is in double digits for a significant number of countries. And the reason there were no ill repercussions from issuing all that debt in 2020 was because yields were so low. In fact, countries like the USA, the UK, Germany, Japan, they actually saw the cost of servicing their debt decline during 2020 because the yields were so low. But they have ongoing funding requirements, and rising yields represent a challenge. So the 5-year has clearly completed its base formation. And this looks like a bullish chart. It suggests that it's really quite likely that we're going to see additional downside in bonds. But that is completely dependent on the assumption that we're going to, in fact, see no intervention by the Federal Reserve. I just don't believe that that is credible. So when we think about the S&P 500, yes, it pulled back today and down over 100 points, and this is a reasonably large downward dynamic. If we get downside follow-through, it will have broken its sequence of higher reaction lows. And it did do that once already at the end of January. So this has been an inconsistency within what had been a quite consistent advance. And if we then think about the medium-term trend, well, the 200-day moving average is about 10% below the peak. It's currently coinciding with the peak from early 2020. So it would, in an ideal scenario, represent an area of potential support. But it's going to be very much dependent on the willingness of the Federal Reserve to fall into line with modern monetary theory, because the US government is about to draw down a large amount of money and pump it into the economy. So there is the potential for strife at the very short end, money market end of the curve. And we're already seeing signs of strife at the long end of the curve, and the yield curve continues to move higher. This isn't necessarily so much about the broad economy any longer. It's about the ability of the various governments around the world to fund their operations. And there is the potential that we're looking at the return of bond vigilantes. Now, the bond market has been largely placated over the course of the last decade by one simple fact, and it is that central banks have been willing to go in there and buy the bonds. They have not relied on the private sector to buy the bonds, and therefore nobody has been complaining because yields were compressing, prices were rising, and everyone was happy. In order to get private investors to pick up the tab for the massive amount of debt that governments are issuing, well, they're going to demand a higher yield, because without the backstop being provided by governments and by central banks, well, there's a lot more risk in the market. If one were to actually look at the credit risk represented by countries and think about it in just simple, bald terms, that they are issuing a lot of debt, they have restive populations that are highly resistant to any measures about curtailing spending or raising taxes, well, who on earth would lend them money without the backstop from the central bank that the government itself or the country itself would help to support the market? It's not just about the fact that the Federal Reserve is buying about $120 billion worth of bonds a month. And one thing I find particularly fishy is that the size of the Fed's balance sheet is not increasing to reflect that $120 billion. So exactly where is that money starting to show up on their balance sheet? Well, perhaps it would be on the M2. And of course, they just don't publish M3 any longer. But in order to get us to the size of the purchases that they're making, well, if we go from, for example, 19 to 19.4, then that potentially is representative of the purchases. But again, it's not exactly going to correlate with the pace with which they said they were going to be buying bonds. So I don't exactly know how to measure this or what the easiest way is to actually confirm those kinds of purchases. Well, the market has basically taken as read that that is what they're doing. But of course, there are also maturing bonds. And the big question, of course, is whether that $120 billion of additional liquidity is being sanitized by some of the maturing debt, or whether it is in fact real new liquidity. But the bond market is clearly telling us that whatever the Fed is doing, it's not enough. So there is the potential that we're going to have a hiccup in the repo market, and then we've already have the hiccup in the long end of the market. And it is quite rational that investors might be looking at some of the most highly levered companies and thinking that this might not be a bad time to start taking some money off the table. Then when we think about the banking sector, well, banks tend to do well in an environment of abundant liquidity. They also tend to do well when the yield curve is expanding, and there is the scope, at least, that they may see some of the inhibitions on their various business models loosened in response to the issues arising from the tightness in the money markets. Well, banks are not going to go up on their own, so we may see some pause and consolidation as we see the short-term overbought conditions starting to be unwound, and not least because we're right in the region of the previous peaks. But they're probably likely to be buying opportunities in future. Then when we look at the oil price, well, commodity prices have been rallying very impressively, but when we start to think about leverage, well, the shale and the unconventional oil and gas sector generally, they're heavily reliant on access to liquidity. You need a great deal of money to drill unconventional wells. It's about $400,000 a well, and this is, excuse me, that's not the right number. 400, there's, it's, I can't remember exactly what it's, millions or hundreds of thousands. But the reality is that unconventional wells are heavily dependent on access to liquidity. And one of the reasons why the USA has been so prolific in terms of its ability to create demand out of these unconventional sources is because interest rates were so low. The entire business model and the elasticity that the oil sector has to rising prices is completely dependent on being able to source the funding necessary to hedge out future production and start drilling those wells to take advantage of the spreads. But of course, that also implies that interest rates are low. So the fact that we're getting higher interest rates is actually a tailwind for oil prices because it puts a dampener on the business models of the unconventional oil and gas companies. That's an additional tailwind for oil, and it's one of the reasons why it was less volatile in here today, even if we do have a short-term overbought condition. When we then think about the gold price, well, as the real yield continues to move back towards parity, and it's been in a sharply negative environment for a long time, well, then that does put pressure on gold. And it came right back down to test the lows over the course of the last few months. In much the same way that the bond markets and the Fed in particular are watching equities as a way, or and certainly watching the bond yield as a measure of how much pain the market is willing to take, gold is acting in an inverse way. So as gold pulls back, it's representative of impatience with the Federal Reserve and the need for additional liquidity. Until they do in fact turn around and re-engage with modern monetary theory, then we're likely to remain in a corrective phase for the gold price. But the reality is that nobody really believes that the Fed is stubborn enough to starve the market of liquidity. So this is a tug of war between central banks and the market, and the continued rise in yields, it suggests that the Fed is going to have to intervene because the cost of servicing the US debt is incredibly profound. It was Ray Dalio made the statement. I'm afraid I just can't find the reference, but I remember him saying clearly in one of his podcasts that it was a $100 billion cost every time the cost of, or the yield on Treasury debt rose by 200 basis points. Well, if we look at the spread between the 10-year and the 3-month, we're really not far off it. The yield curve, and this is the most sensitive version of the yield curve spread, it bottomed at negative 50 basis points. It's almost at 150. So this has been a 200 basis point reversal. This is adding significantly to the cost of servicing the US debt, and growth is really only beginning to pick back up. So the Federal Reserve is very reluctant to raise interest rates, but the bond market wants to see some further assistance. And it's looking increasingly likely that that is what's going to have to happen. And when that happens, well, then it would represent the end of a corrective phase in stocks. But since it's only just beginning to weigh on the stock market, then it's a bit early for the Fed to intervene just yet. So we are due potentially some additional volatility until we in fact see some action by central banks. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I wish all the best to all of you.